read this.
Yeah, so here's my
so
goal.
Good night.
Yeah, good night.
Nice meeting you, Joel.
Thank you.
Okay. Joseph. Yeah. Yosef.
Yosef, I said, don't even go there.
So here's what I did in order to create this little handout for tonight. I looked and I searched the internet in many different sites to try to come up with an answer to the question as to why we're reading these parashiyot at the time of El. Because I have a Kabbalah in my family, it goes back generations, that the Kriyas HaTorah is not coincidental. There's some...
timely.
It's got to be timely. It's got to be related to the time. So I found three different presentations, three different essays on three different sites on the internet. Okay? Now, the first one that you have, which is called Ma'or HaShabbos, comes from a Beis Medrash in Kiryat Sefer. I don't know if you've heard of Kiryat Sefer. And it's for Parsha Shoftim, which we're going to read this Shabbos. Not far. Not far.
One, the big
not far. Now, in Parsha Shoftim, the Torah commands us, Tomim Tia.
You have Shoftim, I have Rie, Shabbos of Trey
Shalom. Just 1 second. It should say Ma'or HaShabbos on top.
I don't have that. I have
so maybe flip it around.
Oh.
And it could be my mistake. Okay. Tomim tia im Hashem Elokecha. Be whole with God, so to speak. What does that mean? So Rashi says, His halech imo bitmimut. We should have a certain reliance on Hashem. In a almost like a naive kind of reliance on Hashem. Don't be too intellectual about it. Titzapelo, rely on him, look towards him. Velo tachkar achrei asigos. Don't try to find divinations and crystal balls and figure out what's going to happen in the future. Just be laid back. This is a good pill against anxiety. You know, we're worried about what's going to happen around the corner.
That's the definition of Tum.
That's Rashi's radical. Definition
that's
of Tum.
That's radical to me. I mean, I've seen this, Rashi, but I...
never, yeah, the Ramban has a whole different approach.
Yeah, right.
But the reason why we want to learn about this Rashi's approach is because it connects, as I said before, to Chodesh El. Do you follow? So why... Again, you could always ask 1,001 questions on anything in Torah, and especially on Parashah and Chumash. In this case, I'm limiting myself to one question, and that is, what is the connection to to the month of Elul? And I want to offer three different answers, and I'm sure there are 1,000 different answers, but we're going to study three because those are the three that I found. Okay. The Torah tells us something which I never knew, maybe you knew it, about the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul and throughout the month of Elul. And he tells us that something very important took place historically on the first of El. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's third trip ascending the mountain. In the first trip, he went up to get the Luchos, but then he destroyed them after he came down 40 days later when he saw the Chet HaEgel. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up a second time on the mountain, and he tries to plead with Hashem, and Hashem accepts his pleas. And finally, he goes up for the third occasion, and that begins on Rosh Chodesh El. He comes down on the 10th of Tishrei, otherwise known as Yom HaKippurim, with the second set of Luchos. But what happened is, according to Pirkei de Rabbi Lezer, when Moshe Rabbeinu ascended the mountain, which is a dangerous kind of thing in the sense that the people might not realize that he's...
He may not come down, like in Ma'aseh Eagle.
Correct. So they blew the shofar. And the shofar was meant as a sign that now begins the 40-day period. So don't get mixed up on the timing. And you'll know not to worship an ega, not to be guilty of avodah zarah. As a result, says the Torah, since they blew the shofar on Rosh Chodesh Elul, when Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain for the third round, therefore we adopted this tradition to blow the shofar on Rosh Chodesh El. So it comes out the following, that there are two shofar blowings during El. There's one in Rosh Chodesh El, and then there's the continuous blowing in the shofar throughout the month of El. The first one is connected, it corresponds to the blowing of the shofar to undermine Avodah Zorah and the power of Avodah Zorah at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and protect the Jewish people from worshipping a golden calf. The rest of El, the shofar is being blown in order to uplift us and inspire us during the entire month of El. Now I'm up to a paragraph that says, again, I know the print is very small, V'tzarech lahavin. So again, for anyone who's following the text, you'll find it. He says, I don't understand. Why did they have to blow a shofar when Moshe Rabbeinu climbs the mountain on Rosh Chodesh El? In fact, what caused the Cheta Egel? Was it a miscalculation of the day or the moment in which Moshe Rabbeinu climbed the mountain on the first round? No, that wasn't the problem. The problem was what? Moshe Rabbeinu coming down from the mountain. Remember, that's where they got confused. You know, even if you would have a stopwatch and you would tell me exactly at what time Moshe Rabbeinu went up the mountain, which they certainly
knew. My psychic state, my fear.
Correct. And not only that, Chazal say that they saw an image in the Shamayim. They thought it was Moshe Rabbeinu on a coffin. Anyway, they were totally confused. And Chazal say in the Gemara and Shabbos that part of the mistake they made was that they calculated the first day that Moshe Rabbeinu went up as a full day, but that was only a half a day in truth, because a Lelo Imo, Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, the Jewish calendar day is 24 hours that starts with the night, and Moshe Rabbeinu went up daytime, and therefore they were off by 6 hours. So the calculation was wrong. But to guarantee that they wouldn't worship an Egel by blowing a shofar on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to the mountain, that doesn't make any sense. Furthermore, he says that the whole Maisa, the whole episode, this terrible catastrophe of worshipping the Egel, was a result of Irbuv HaSatan Es HaOlam. Chazal say that the Satan turned the world, so to speak, inside out. Normally, the pieces of a puzzle fit together and there's clarity. But what the Satan was able to do was he confused everyone. And all this confusion took place at the moment, or shall I say, right before they worshipped the Egel, when they expected Moshe to come down, and he didn't come down. So how are you going to prevent such a mistake? L'chora, this is the bottom right column, he says, Kedei Limnoa Tazu, if you want to prevent that mistake, he should have gathered the people together before he went up the mountain
and told them,
he should have given a whole shiur klali. He should have given a whole shiur klali, he says, to teach them Lelo Ki Imo, that the night has to be attached to the day. And don't just count 40 days, you have to count 40 days plus nights, if you know what I mean. And then they won't repeat the same error that they did on the first round. But blowing the shofar, he says, well, how is that going to succeed? Joel, can I jump you just to close the door? Because I'm hearing a lot of
what
noise.
What is that?
I don't know exactly. I usually it's the kolel that's learning together. Oh, I don't know. I can't tell you exactly what, you know. Oh. So in an astonishing remark, he says, B'makom Zos, instead of Moshe Rabbeinu clarifying to them that they should avoid such a mistake, they announced his going up the mountain with a shofar blowing. That's gonna succeed. Okay. Oh, see, he says the following: Yiduim divrei Rambam. This is on the, if you're on the left column, the third paragraph. The Rambam tells us that although blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is a divine decree, which we can't understand, we can never really understand why God determines that this is what we have to do, but nevertheless there's a symbolic message in the shofar. The shofar has an inherent power to it. Uru Yeshena Mishnaskam, a very famous Rambam. You know, wake up from your slumber during the whole year, you have a priority system that's warped. Get it right. Understand what you're here for and what your goal is and what your priorities should be. V'chizru b'tshuva, and do tshuva. Remember your Creator. Don't forget the truth and don't get caught up with the vanities of this world. So it means that although the shofar is admittedly a gzeiras hakasu, that's something that defies our understanding, but nevertheless, it has a certain power to it, and it could awaken a person and understand his priorities. The shofar of Rosh Hashanah now expands, so to speak, and we begin that process that the Rambam describes of Ur Yishenim, of getting the proper perspective on life and the right priorities on Rosh Chodesh El. Again, it's not a mitzvah. We don't have a mitzvah to blow the shofar of Rosh Chodesh El. But the whole custom of blowing the shofar and shofar, it's all this remez. If you remember, the Rambam says that the shofar is both a mitzvah, and that's exeris hakos, but it also has a remez to it. A remez means a symbolic message that it conveys to us. In the case of blowing shofar in Rosh Chodesh, there is no mitzvah element. What we're left with is the element of a remez. And that remez is to wake up from our sleep. It's like an alarm clock, but a spiritual alarm clock. And the alarm clock has a certain power to it that's inherent in the shofar. And now we're going to analyze what exactly that power is to, you know, that's inherent in the shofar. First, we're going to quote a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says, "V'chatzotzos v'kol shofar hariyu lifnei ha-melech Hashem," that the shofar has a certain sound to it, which is like compared to a trumpet that we blow for the king. You know, the king is coming to town. I guess in England you'd say
queen.
The queen, right? So we blow the shofar. You know, I don't know, I guess they, in England, I don't know if they blow the shofar for the queen of England. I don't know. But anyway, so the first element of shofar is what we call malchus. Malchus means that we accept God and acknowledge Him to be a sovereign ruler. Hashem, Elokei Yisrael Melech, u'malchuso bakol mashal. Bakol mashal means He is the divine being that controls and rules all of us, everything, every dimension of our life. That's number one. And when we hear the shofar and we acknowledge and we declare God as the king of the universe, we nullify our own individual desires for the sake of God's desire, of His will. And we admit to ourselves that although in the past maybe we sinned and we weren't meticulous, but now on this day that we hear the shofar, we accept upon ourselves God's divinity and His rule. We also ask Hashem for a prayer for the future that He should protect us. That's the first element in shofar. The second element in shofar comes from another pasuk, which I believe is also in Tehillim, if I'm not mistaken. Hayitaka shofar ba'ir v'amlo yechrodu. The shofar is meant to scare us, so to speak. Not in a negative sense, you know, sometimes you have phobias and so forth, but rather a sense of awe, perhaps. The kol shofar cries out to us and says to us, run away from anything that might undermine your dedication to Hashem. Tivrach min advarim halulim lifgo abecha. Things that might be, that might trip you up and might be spiritual stumbling blocks. Avoid them. Be overwhelmed and
tremble.
And tremble, right? Tremble in front of God. He says that this is what the pasuk means in our parsha in Shoftim when it says, Tomim tiyeh mashem olkecha. You make all sorts of calculations. You figure you're going to figure out what's going to be in the future. No. Hishalech imo bitmimus. Accept Hashem as your ruler and with purity and simplicity, so to speak, naivete almost, dedicate yourself to Hashem. Realize that in the past you made all sorts of calculations and you figured, oh well, you know what, I can do this, I can do that, I can live in my way and I can live according to my will. Man has a tendency and a desire to be autonomous in the moral realm. No. Comes the shofar and it wakes us up. And therefore when Moshe Rabbeinu climbs the mountain for the third time around, they blow the shofar and they say the shofar has to awaken you from any mistakes. Realize that what's going on here is that God has commanded Moshe Rabbeinu to go up and He's going to come down. and he's going to come down 40 days later on the day of Yom HaKippurim, the day of ultimate Malchus Shamayim. So that's the first thing I wanted to share. Now if you turn your page to the flip side, you'll see something that on top says Tiv HaKihila. Okay, this is a Rabbi Gamliel Rabinovich, and he wants to connect a pasuk that we read just a few days ago in Parshas Re'eh, which came out on what day of the month in the Hebrew calendar? Rosh Chodesh, right? Remember, Shabbos was Rosh Chodesh. And the Torah says something very strange. We know that you're not allowed to eat blood. But the Torah says, Chazak, rak chazak lebilti echol adam. Strengthen yourself. And don't violate this iser of eating dam. So Rashi says, what does it mean, chazak lebilti echol dam? Mimash enemer chazak atalomed shayishtufim bedam liochlo. That apparently it was very common back in the day to drink blood. Maybe they had special blood goblets. I don't know. Lefichach huchrach lomer chazak. Rashi quotes a statement in the name of the Tana of Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda insists that they were blood drinkers. Rav Shim ben Azay omer lo ba kosuv el azhircha ulelamdecha. No. We have no natural desire to drink blood. Blood is repulsive. But rather the Torah wants to warn us and say to us something that we should learn. Ad kama tzarich lischazek, how much do you have to strengthen yourself in mitzvahs? And the Torah is giving you a kal v'chomer. Im dam, which is very easily shomer mimenu, you can easily avoid drinking dam. She'eno de misavalo, a person doesn't have any desire to drink blood. And nevertheless, the Torah says, be careful. Hutzrach lechazkecha bi'azarosa, and says, chazak lebilti achol dam, kal v'chomer l'shar mitzvahs, for other things that have temptation. So Rav Rabinovich says, I don't understand what's going on. Usually when you have a machlokes, there's general agreement, but there's a detail. It's not from one polar extreme to the other. Here we have machlokes stream of Yehuda Rav Shimon. Why don't we do a sociological... let's do a psychological study. He calls it Dover Shenitan Lebirur. Let's get together a group. Yeah, what do they call it? Experiment group. What's it called? You know, when you take a model group, you know, in order to do a controlled experiment. Why don't we do it? What? It has a technical
focus group, I don't know.
Yeah, a group. So we'll take a group and we'll figure out, do they like Dom or do they not like Dom? And he's convinced that the group will paskin in favor of Reb Shimon ben Azai, that we don't like. But he says, where do you find a machlokas here from one extreme to the other, where the people love dam and they have a cheshek and a taiva for dam, where they find it absolutely repulsive, and they didn't even bother checking it out? You know, it seems like something that depends upon the reality. Let's check out the reality. And yet these two opinions are such polar extremes. Kerachok mizrach mimarov, like from the east all the way to the west. So he says the following. In order to understand this machlokes and what Rashi wants to convey, we need the following introduction. He says that certain averos, criminal acts, we understand we can justify in our minds how the Yetzer Hara, how the evil inclination gets the best of us. You know, there are temptations and he trips us up. But he says that in truth we really don't understand how the Yetzer Hara is able to seduce us and trip us up. He says, if we would understand what is the soul of a Jew,
comes from God,
from the holiest places on high. Yes, he says, "Chatzuva mimakom elyon
v'kadosh."
How does the Yetzer Hara tell us to do things that, in the eyes of God, are so despicable? How does he succeed in tripping us up? He says that the answer has to be that the divine being, in His infinite wisdom, gave the green light. He gave the license to the Yetzer to tempt us. But how does the Yetzer Hara plan and scheme to tempt us and to be machshel us, you know, to cause us to sin?
Something that's against our own nature,
Our own essence, which is an essence of a nefesh elyon and kadosh. Oh. So he says the following. You might argue nobody's going to want to listen to the Yetzer Hara, given the fact that he's an essence. He gives a marshal, he says, imagine if you had a friend who tries to convince you to throw yourself into a burning furnace. He says, would you listen to him? It's clear as day, he says, that he can't seduce you to jump into a burning furnace. So how could the Yetzer Hara possibly seduce you to pollute yourself and corrupt yourself with lowest sin? And you know very well how severe the sin is. So how does the Yetzer Hara do it? So he says the following, that in order to understand the Yetzer Hara and his mechanics, so to speak, we have to understand something called blindness, not physical blindness that we spoke about earlier tonight, but he says the fact that the Yetzer Hara has a, you'll see a paragraph that says, ach, yeah, so the third line he says, Nosim Ol Yetzer Hara Rishus, he gets license from God, L'Sama'ut, Milashon Sama, Sima, Es Enof, to blind us. And how does he blind us? He convinces us that we have a lot to gain by this sin. That don't just look at the negative side of the sin, but rather look at the good side of the sin. Look what benefits you might have. You'll look at something that you're not allowed to eat and it looks so beautiful and attractive and you have a craving for it. Fulfill your taiva. But he says that's only half the story. He says that the rishus that's given to the Yetzer Hara is even greater than that. There are situations in which you have no benefit from the sin whatsoever. And nevertheless, the Yetzer Hara is able to blind you. He says, let's talk about avodah zarah. The most ridiculous thing in the world, to bow down to a stone, a shtickholz, right? And he says that we in our generation laugh when we hear about the Friedrich of the earlier generations, that they fell to pray to the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah.
How did it ever happen?
So the answer lies in the Gemara of Bava Kamma. The Gemara tells us that the Yetzer Hara was so successful in Avodah Zarah, the temptation was so intense that even great Jews were tempted to worship idols, that the Anshei Knesset HaGedol had to stand up and pray to God to destroy the Yetzer Hara for idol worship. So today, we don't have the Yetzer Hara for idol worship. So we laugh. Why would a person worship a tree? A piece of wood? But the Yetzer Hara, in his full glory, back in the day when he was in control of Avodah Zarah, he was able to blind the people in such a way that something that's absolutely objectively or logically ridiculous, and convince them through the powers of the Yetzer Hara to worship an idol. He says that every generation has its temptations. And later generations might laugh and say, why did the earlier generations fall prey to the Yetzer Hara? It seems absolutely ridiculous. He says that, you know, the Yetzer Hara for arayos, for immorality, was so intense that the Anshei Knesset HaGedol tried to do whatever they did with the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. They tried to get rid of the Yetzer Hara for arayos, but they weren't able to do so. It would undermine the whole world, the Gemara says. But again, it's all a kind of a blindness in which the Yetzer Hara could blind us. And now we get to the main punchline for today. Al-Pi Elu Advarim, the paragraph starts. He said we can now begin to understand the machlokas about Dam. How could it be that Rabbi Yehuda says that they had taiva to drink blood? Blood is repulsive. But the answer is, how did they have a taiva years ago to worship Avodah Zarah? Vashi says, I would have lifted up my skirts and ran to Avodah Zarah if I had lived in that generation. The answer is that some periods of time, the Yetzer Hara is given the green light, the permission to completely blind a person and to give him an intense Yetzer, a desire for something that logically, in a normal context, would have no appeal whatsoever. Comes along Reb Shim ben Azai, and he says that, you know what? In truth, today, We don't have that Yetzer Hara for Dan. And therefore, the only reason why the Torah says Chazak lebilti acholas Adam, why did the Torah say Chazak? It's because the Torah wanted to teach us a lesson. And it wanted to say to us, you know what, we're laid back about certain things. We place ourselves in temptations and we say, well, these things don't tempt me at all. It would be ridiculous. There's not even a havamina that I would violate the Torah. So therefore, according to this opinion of Rav Shimon Azai, the Torah realizes that we don't have this intense desire and craving to drink blood. But yet the Torah says, Chazak. He says the following: if you want to address those periods of time where the Yetzer was given the license to tempt us on drinking blood, then you can accept the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the first opinion, that Chazak lefishem shtufim bedam. They love drinking blood. Again, it must have tasted sweet to them. I don't know. The Yetzer Hara was so powerful, he convinced them that this is great. You know, maybe.
Is it a health food? Maybe.
They thought it helped.
Bottling it.
Comes along Ben Azai, and he says, no. That's not. It's true. You know, everything that Rabbi Yehuda said is 100% true, that back in the day they had an intense desire. But I want to add something to the picture. Ben Azai is not disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. There's no machlokas whatsoever. It's elu v'elu. We can put them together and integrate them into one whole. Whereas the first opinion that Rabbi Yehuda was addressing a particular time period, and that's where the word chazak comes in, because we have to be very careful that the Yetzer shouldn't blind us to think that drinking blood is a good thing. And during certain historical periods of time, apparently it's all right. Ben Azai says, no, you don't have to go that way. You can explain and justify the chazak, even al zmanim regilim. This is the last paragraph in Ben Azai. And the second line, he says, ki im al zmanim regilim. In other words, we can't say in our time, in a normal period of time, that nafsho shel adam chomedes dam, that the nefesh of a person desires dam. So what is the pasuk telling me when it says chazak? And the answer is kivna tol lirames liyodam. The Torah wants to hint to a person shegam bezu hasha'a, even in this hour, in this generation, where we're not tempted, we don't have a desire to drink blood. Nevertheless, mutal olav, a person still has to do shmirah. He has to do very careful protection of himself. We have to treat dam in the same way that we would treat something else, with gedarim and siyogim. We have to put fences around it, we have to avoid it. Kishema, because we never know, perhaps God will press a button and tinasein rishus, he'll give a green light, a go-ahead to the Yetzer Hara l'skarispo. So we look at 365 averis in the Torah and we say, well, most of them don't tempt me, so let me lower my guard. And here the Torah says, chazak. You never know when God will give.
We aroused
the Yetzer Hara. So that I thought was very beautiful. And finally, I have a piece here from a different site, which is called Shvilei Pinchas. So see if you find that. Okay. Now, this particular piece in the Shvilei Pinchas, his name is Rav, he's alive and well today, Baruch Hashem, his name is Rav Pinchas Friedman, and he is the Rosh Kol in Belz. He's actually the Chavrus of the Belzer Rebbe. And he prints on a weekly basis a Parsha sheet. And in this Parsha sheet, just one second. What parsha do you have? It should say Shoftim on it. Does it say Shoftim or does it say Re'eh? Or in the bottom?
Parsha Shoftim says on top.
Okay. And does it have the word Tefillin in it?
Where?
In the title. Does the title have it? Okay, I just want to.
Yes. Oh,
excellent. So.
Yad Ushalosh.
Okay, great. Okay. So let me just get it out. So I have it as well. Okay, here it is. This week, we're going to read Parsha Shoftim. And in Parshas Shoftim we have the mitzvah of Milchama. And in the context of the mitzvah Milchama, we have what's called Kohen Mashuach Milchama, and his job is to stand up and make an announcement in which he sends certain soldiers back home. And he tells them that they're not going to be part of this military campaign. Excellent. So one of them is Rach HaLevav, Yoshev LeBeis. So Rashi says, what's Rach HaLevav? Literally it means he's afraid. What is he afraid of? He's afraid of going out to battle?
Soft of heart.
Soft of heart. You remember in the Wizard of Oz, who was it, the Tin Man?
Had no heart.
Had no heart. Or no, sorry, the lion was Rach HaLevav. So Rashi says, no, that's not what Rach HaLevav means. Rashi invokes a sugya Masechta Sota, because all the laws of Milchama are in Masechta Sota. And Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, Hayore v'Rach HaLevav zeu ha-misyori min ha-averos shebiyod. He doesn't feel like he's worthy of divine protection because
of the killing of the averos that might happen while he's in war.
So the Gemara asks, what kind of sins is he afraid of? So the Gemara says, Soch ben tefillah l'tefillah, which means he put on his tefillah shel yad, and then he interrupted before he put on his tefillah shel rosh with a dibur of hafsaka. That's called Soch ben tefillah l'tefillah. So Rav Friedman here in this work wants to understand, of all the averis in the world that he's afraid of,
this is the one
they singled out.
Yeah.
Why? We have 365 averis, and this man is afraid to go out to battle because he's guilty of sin. So what did he do? He schmoozed a little bit between his tefillin shel yad, tefillin shel rosh. Okay, it's not the best thing, not the best idea for me, by the way. That would be a problem. I don't know how many brachas do you make on tefillin. Do you make two? Yeah, I only make one. So if I'm I only make on shel yad.
I don't know.
Yeah. And also Sfaradim don't make on the shel. So if I speak out after the shel yad, I have to make a second bracha.
So because you're mafsik.
So the bracha on the shel yad can't cover the shel rosh.
I never in my life made
a bracha on the shel rosh. I was never one.
We grew up Hasidish, it was clear you get, yeah. You know.
Well, this is a minhag of the Arizal. So we're Lubavitch. In Lubavitch, my father's seven generations Lubavitch. In any event, so we're now up to Chodesh El, correct? And the question is there any connection between this parsha that we just read and the Aver Biyodo of the Yotzei Milchama that he has to go Chozer Miarchei Milchama because he spoke between Tfil Shel Yad Shel Rosh? Does that have anything to do with Chodesh El? And it cannot be coincidental that this is what we're going to read at this particular juncture. But first he says, we have 12 months of the year, we have 12 tribes. And the Bnei Yisoskar, who was one of the great Hasidic giants, he claims, based on the Arizal, that the 12 months of the year parallel the 12 Shvatim. And based on brilliant insights as to where how the Degola was set up in the Midbar, and also in terms of different... arrangements of Yud Kei Vav Kei, because there are real. So anytime you have four letters, you have 12 different possibilities in terms of arranging those four letters, and each one of the Shvatim has his arrangements of letters, and those arrangements of the letters parallel a particular month of the year. So the Arizal writes that the month of Elul is the month of Shevet Gad, and again we have a question. Why is Shevet Gad? You know, we always consider the month of El to be a very special month.
What's God's great?
Yeah, what are his claims to fame? Yeah, what is his his CV? You know that he deserves. Yeah. He deserves to get Chodesh El. Right, the Mezach who Shevet Gad, the Chodesh El. So he says, in order to understand this, we have to, Torah sometimes gets a little gory, so I apologize, we're going to get a little bloody here, but I didn't write the text. The Torah says that when in Vizos HaBracha, Moshe Rabbeinu bestows a bracha on God, he speaks about God as Teref, Teref Zroa Af Kodkod. Zroa is the arm, and Kodkod is the head. Now, what we have to know about Shevet Gad is they were the warriors of Israel. In fact, when you remember 2.5 Shvatim didn't want to go forward, Moshe made them promise, and God at the forefront, that they would go over the Yad, they would cross the Jordan, and they would be the Chalutzim, you know, to fight the battle against the seven nations that occupied Palestine. And Rashi says that the power, the military strength of Shevet Gad is described here by Moshe Rabbeinu in the terms
very, very visible, very, very,
very gory, very bloody. Because
with, you know, the damage that they did.
Right, the damage. Because they used to, in those days, they didn't have guns, and in this day, so they killed with the sword. So God, when he would kill his enemy, is Chod Chin HaRosh, that's Kod Kod.
Well,
Im Azroa.
One hit. Samurai. They were our samurai.
And the question is, why is the Torah making, the eternal Torah, making such a big deal about this gory kind of, you know, again, God was very powerful, fine, but to describe their might in the military battlefield in such a way, Zroav Kodkod, what's it all about? So in order to put this all together, we start with the Rosh. The Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, who lived about 900 years ago or more even, authored a work on the laws of Tefillin. It's called Halachas Ketanos. And he says something amazing. He says, Tanya, we learned in a Braisa, Sach bein Tefillin l'Tefillin, if a person talks out between the Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh, Avera hi biyado, v'chozer me'orche amulchom, he's got to go back.
Orche
means the battalions. Orchim are the battalions. The battalions of the soldiers. So he has to leave the battalion. They send him home packing. Why? Because he spoke out between Tefillin Shel Yad and Tefillin Shel Rosh. Says the Rosh in Hilachas Ketanos, Al Shem Kiyum Mitzvahs Tefillin V'Tikunam. He says that if we dedicate ourselves to a meticulous observance of the mitzvah of tefillin in the most proper way, what will that do for us? It has a practical benefit. Yiskayim b'anshei ha-melchama, those who go out to battle, will receive the blessing of v'taraf zroa af kodkod. That the strength and the power of God
will now come
to fruition for all of the Jewish people in the way that they'll successfully defeat their enemies in battle. And the blessing of God, of Moshe Rabbeinu bestowed on God, of the Torah, Zoraf Kodkod, will be fulfilled for all of Klal Yisrael. How? If we're careful about tefillin. Which means that we don't speak between the Tefillin Shel Yad and the Tefillin Shel Rosh. So when the Torah says Taraf Zroa, the Zroa here is what? Is the Tefillin Shel Yad. And Afkod Kod is the Tefillin Shel Rosh. And in the Zchus, says the Rosh, of a fulfillment of Kedasu Kedin, the mitzvah of Tefillin, both on the Shel Yad and the Shel Rosh, that's going to give us the protection against our enemies. So let's just put together a few of the pieces of the puzzle.
I love the word the chalutz. Like the pioneers, the front runners.
Front runners. Yeah. They're at the head of the battle.
They're the column.
And why they at the head?
They set the tone.
Correct. And why then? Because they're the warriors. They're the giborim. But now we're adding another element into the equation, says the Rosh. We can become, all of us, a powerful force to defeat our enemies if we come with tefillin. Tefillin, for some reason, is the key to success on the military battlefield. And if we're not careful about tefillin, then we have to go back home. We're in the category of
Yorei
Varachlevo. Now at this point in the presentation, he wants to get some sort of an insight. You'll see on the left column a paragraph that starts with the word Ella, He says now we have.
Why is it Dafke the Pesach Hadas? I'm trying to figure out why that is the
right.
distinguishing feature of losing the power of killing.
Correct.
As opposed to putting it on sloppily or letting a piece fall. Or, yeah. It could be so many other.
Madua, he asks. You see on the second one, Be'emes. Choshev Inyin Zeh. The significance of this halacha that we have to observe shalo yafsik bein tefillin shel yad tefillin shel rosh ad kedei kach goes so far as it expresses itself, reflects itself in a successful achievement of gvura in the battlefield of v'taraf zroa af kodkod. What's the connection here? Again, you know, you've got the tefillin shel yad and the tefillin shel rosh, and you don't separate them with a hefsek, and therefore you have the blessing of success on the battlefield, v'taraf zroa af kodkod. What's it all about?
Hope is integrated in the IDF protocols.
What do you mean by protocols?
You know, how they train, how they talk up, how they become great soldiers.
Oh,
I'm not sure.
You mean here in Israel?
Yes.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the fellows who are learning here full time in Abbas Medrash understand this. I mean, this is a big chiddush what we're learning.
It's
right. But I do, if I'm not mistaken,
it's like,
I could be wrong, but Lubavitch goes out to the you know, before when the soldiers gather together anywhere, but especially before they're going out to battle, they bring them tefillin. Have you ever seen it? You can see it in the videos. They have some video
into downtown Brooklyn and
right.
They may as well
right into the hotel. Right.
Wherever
you go.
What do they call it?
Mitzvah tanks? No.
No. What do you call it when you're part of the army?
Right.
Of course, you're in the army.
Correct.
I didn't sign up for it, I don't think, but they try to sign you up.
Right.
Try to make that prominent in your thinking.
Now, I'm looking at the clock, and I'm saying to myself, we have about an hour's work here, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to summarize his approach. And the main...
You're talking about a particular page?
Yeah, it should say days on it, on the bottom.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So what's here on days? He says that the two letters of the Torah that represent the beginning and the end of the Torah, that's always very significant in Hasidic thought, are the Lamed and the Beis.
Lev.
And this whole presentation is about the Lev. And he proves from two major sources, the Tzidkas HaTzadik of the Pre-Tzadik, and from the Ari who came before him, that the Lev is the determining factor in Chochmas HaTorah.
But no, first of all, I'm always worried about this because Bereshis is Bet and Bnei Kol Yisrael.
Right, so he's going to explain why it's in that order. Right. Again, if we have time. Your question is addressed in a paragraph that starts Umash and Nirmas, which is in the middle column towards the bottom.
I have it.
Okay. But again, you know, we can get into so many different details here.
We have a few minutes.
What I'd rather do is just get the framework of what he wants to say. He says the following, that you and I would have thought that the head, the moach, the brain, is the seat of chokhmah, and it will determine, you know, if you did very well on your college boards, or if your IQ is above, you know, 160 or whatever it is, that's going to guarantee success in Torah knowledge. He proves no, that chokhmah in Torah depends upon the lev. The lev is going to activate the moach, and the lev represents the seat of yirah. So that's why the pasuk says Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. That lev is the seat of yirah, and if there's yirah, then there could be chachma. So our success in Chachmas HaTorah really depends upon, it hinges on our ability to prevent, to present, or to refine our lev and intensify our lev to the point of absolute dedication to Yiras Hashem. So yirah through the lave now becomes the key to success in Chochmas HaTorah. And he wants to suggest that tefillin is made up of two parts, Yad and Rosh. Yad represents the lave, and Rosh represents the intellect. But in order to activate the tefillin shel Rosh, we need two things to happen. Number one, we have to first put on the tefillin shel Yad. And when we do that first, what we do is we intensify our yira, which is in the lave, and that's going to make it feasible to facilitate the rush, the tefillin shel rush of Chochmas HaTorah. Without the lave, we cannot achieve Chochmas HaTorah. And he says that the key of keys here is to integrate the two together, to realize that these are not two distinct entities, but that they work in tandem as one indivisible entity. And if a person is mafsik besicha between tefillin shel yad and tefillin shel rosh, he is indicating that the shel rosh operates on its own, kaviyochol, independent of the shel yad. That Chochmah is just a reflection of intellect, and the more intellect I have, the more successful I will be. But that's not true. Why? Because if your heart is not dedicated to Yiras Shamayim, then your heart desires all sorts of different things. So you may have a great intellect, and you may actually sit down and study Torah, but you're not going to achieve the ultimate goal and the purpose of Torah study, because your heart is so pulled in so many different directions that you don't have clarity of thought and Chochmas HaTorah. And therefore, he says, it's very critical to understand that the bracha that will guarantee our success in battle is the same bracha that was bestowed upon God. Because that bracha that was bestowed upon God is the connection between the lave and the zroa, which is the keneged lave, and the kodkod, which is keneged kochmas harosh. And he says the following, that you and I might have thought that if you have a mitzvah that's made up of two component parts, the bracha should be made as close as possible to the end of the mitzvah, to the clincher of the mitzvah, what we call the gemar mitzvah. But in the case of tefillin, no. We make the bracha on the tchilas ha-mitzvah. And again, as I told you, my minhag, which is based on the Ari,
that's the whole mitzvah.
That's the whole bracha, it's only on that. Is when you talk about making a bracha on the tefillin shel yad, you're really setting up the framework, so to speak, for the tefillin shel rosh, because the yad is keneged alev, and that has to come first, and the bracha is going to come on the shel yad, so that the lev is prepared for the awe of yira, of accepting upon ourselves the total sovereignty of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's called Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shamayim. Once we have our lave that's totally attuned and dedicated to Ol Malchus Shamayim, then we're ready for the Moach. Then we're ready for studying the Torah, and the Torah is now going to penetrate into our very being and uplift us. And basically, what's going to protect us against our enemies when we go out to battle? It's this total dedication to the Torah. But that dedication to the Torah is dependent upon the prerequisite of lave. And in order to achieve the lave, we have to have the tefillin shel yad that comes before the tefillin shel rosh. And that's what God represents. God represents the connection between the lave and the rosh. And if we separate between the two, then we're really in trouble. So I only photocopied for you the first two pages. There are many, many other pages here which I didn't photocopy for you. It's a very big mimer. But what I found fascinating is that he's going to connect this particular dimension of Parsha Shoftim, namely the dimension of Orchem Melchom, and who's Chozem Orchem Melchom, because they were sat between Tefillin Shel Yad. He's going to connect this to Chodesh El. Because he says that Chodesh Elul is dedicated to this concept of purifying the heart. And that means that we start with the tefillin shel yad. And he says that one of the great Ramazan, there are many Ramazan to Chodesh Elul, is Es Levavcha the Es Levav Zarecha. Because Es starts with an Aleph, Levavcha with a Lamed, the S is above, and Levav is with a Lamed. And twice, in this very short pasuk, which represents Elul, the Torah uses the word lev or levav. And why? Because the essence of El depends upon our lev. It depends upon dedicating our lev to the mid of Yira, of being focused in a single-minded way, exclusively on the awe of Hashem, the divine sovereignty of God, the Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim through that Yira. And he quotes the pasuk Isha Yiras Hashem Hitis Halal from Mishlei. And again, you and I might think that that's referring to the Eishes Chayil. Okay, that's fine. That's good. But it's more than that. It's also a symbolic reference to Klal Yisrael. And it tells you something about the Kala in the marriage relationship between Knesset Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. She is Yiras Hashem Hitis Halal. Any tehillah, any song of praise that we have for her, meaning for Knesset Yisrael, it's all based on Yiras Hashem, and the source and the home of Yiras Hashem is in the heart. And that is what Shevet God represents. And that's what the Tefillin Shel Yad represents. And that's why Tefillin Shel Yad really represent the entire Torah. That's why the pasuk says, Levad Tiyat Torah Hashem Beficha. And if Yiras Hashem will be dedicated to integrate the heart with the mind and the Yiras Hashem, then will be Zoche to all the great aspects of Chodesh Elul. Okay. We'll talk Myrit. You want to join us for Myrit?